buzzer may purr on its way. Oh, my goodness.
They have to get in. No timeouts. They do. Florida.
Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, the definitive college basketball podcast.
Welcome to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage, or Dockage and Greenberg. Dan Dockage has started to kind of figure out if Andrew Luck will ever play for the Colts, but we won't get into that. What we will get into is maybe a little college basketball. And, you know, before we get into some of the NCAA stuff with, you know, players appealing and not winning their appeals, D squared, a lot of exhibition games, a lot of semi-secret scrimmages, but we're a week away from starting the college basketball season. What is going through the minds, do you think, of most of the coaches in America right now?
I think that at Indiana, going through our mind, and Bowling Green, which were two party places, hope nobody does anything stupid because it's Halloween. I mean, that's a part of it. I think that excitement, you know, getting ready, let's go. Long off season, you know, a lot of time spent with kids, a lot of time spent preparing. But you know what, Seth? The thing that I really like about right now is we're going to have some really good games to start the season. You know, Maui's going to be great. Portland's going to be phenomenal. Champions Classic is going to be a fantastic event. And I think that's needed. Like, I think that, and this may be just me giving an editorial here, I think you run the risk between you, me, Jay, you know, Fran, college basketball guys, of talking a little bit like the NFL, too much about outside crap. You know, the games are what make the sport, the kids, the coaches, the whole deal. And I would be thinking that most coaches are just happy to get to games and forget about all the other crap, the recruiting, whatever else it is. That's my thought.
Yeah, I agree. I'll tell you one thing. And the Halloween thing, you know, you say it in jest.
No,
but
I don't.
Halloween's an opportunity for people to act like idiots and think they can get away with it. I mean, it really is. You dress up. It's almost like a walking, talking one of those message boards, because everyone's anonymous. You know, you put on a costume and all of a sudden you think you're anonymous. Well, you're not anonymous, especially when you're like, you know, 6'10" and, you know, and different. So, like, you know, to me, I think Halloween's a worry. I think this time of the year, with a week away, you're sitting there going, all right, you got your checklist, right? All right, you know, what do we have to have ready to start the season? And you're saying, are we ready to play? You know, our special situations, press offense, three-quarter court pressure attack, late game, full court, half court. You know, are we able to communicate, change defenses? Are we ready to understand how we go into a game, how will our huddles be? Just, you know, all those things, those checklists that go into it, I think this week before, you've got to work on yourself more than anything else. I think you've got to also understand that, look, this is just the beginning, and that, you know, it's not where you are now, but it's where you're going. And make sure your guys understand, all right, these are the three or four things that we can do really well, and these are the three or four things that we're going to do. Let's not make it too complicated. Because I think a lot of times, you know, especially when coaches have more access to guys now, they make early in the season, they make the game too difficult.
I totally agree with that. Let me throw something else out. I was actually talking to Laval Jordan, who played at Butler, and we were talking about this simple thing. When you practice every day, whether it's at Hinkle like they do, or I practiced at Assembly Hall, and then all of a sudden, and I don't really care how old you are, it's different as a senior to a degree than a freshman, but particularly as a freshman or a transfer, the place that you're playing at, Hinkle Fieldhouse, Assembly Hall, is not the same place that you're playing games at. And I'll explain. All of a sudden, more bleachers are pulled out. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. The lighting is different. The whole environment is different. Now, a lot of places, I know Florida does this, and I know a lot of other schools do this, they don't practice in the facility that they play in, so it even magnifies it more. But that's a deal for teams this time of year to get used to, if you have a home game, playing in the same building that you've been practicing. Because I swear to God, the first time I walked into Assembly Hall to do a game, Seth, I honest to God thought I was in a different building. As soon as I walked in, and then it settled in, and we were at home and all that. But it's just odd, Seth. It's one of those. It's just another little thing that you figure out with your team. Let's put it that way.
Yeah, when the lights go on, it's totally different. I mean, you know, it's the old line. Coach Lababo used to tell us. He said, you go through all those dress rehearsals. No one's in the stands, and you come out in a dress rehearsal, and you have one line. It's hark. Is that a cannon I hear? And, you do it the first day and, before the early morning dress rehearsal and bam, the cannon goes off and you go, hark, is that a cannon I hear? And then you do the afternoon dress rehearsal with the film and cannon goes off, boom. And where do you go? Hark, is that a cannon I hear? And then all of a sudden it's game night and the lights are on. All right. And the cannon goes off and you go, what the bleep is that?
Right. Right.
It's a different deal, and especially I think really for the freshmen, because that's why these exhibitions have been good, and some teams play D2 teams, and that's good. I think the other thing is that you usually start the game with a guarantee game, you season with a guarantee game, and you know what? Guarantee games, if you don't make a couple of shots early and it doesn't get freed up early, and say a young player who thinks college basketball is going to be easy, and then all of a sudden it becomes a lot harder. Settling in. Like I used to tell our guys, it takes a little bit of time to settle in. You're not going to blow someone out in the first 4 minutes. Get a gap, which is three stops in a row. Let's get some layups. Let's get to the offensive glass. Let's get out in transition. Make it easy early in terms of getting the shots you want at the rim, and then you'll settle in and you can play on instinct. But early on, dudes are running to spots. I think that's the biggest thing early in the season. Don't you think early in the season, instead of running offense, guys run to get to the end offense? You've dummied offense 8,000 times. Instead of playing that offense, guys literally run through cuts. They don't run to the rim to score layups. They don't come off screens as hard. They don't sprint to the down screens. They run their offense like it's 5-on-0. Getting to the end of the offense instead of trying to make every single action in the offense a scoring opportunity.
Well, we always, every in motion and straight motion, and Coach Knight always ran motion. What we found was kids are doing this. You don't set up a cut and you go to the baseline and you go to the lane. Everybody wants to get into the lane. Everybody, it's like a magnet. You get drawn to the baseline in motion. You get drawn to the lane. And then as the season goes, you figure it out. But it's an interesting time of year regardless. It's a fascinating time of year. I wish that let me back up. I like what the Big Ten is doing. I like the fact that the Big Ten, early. Now we're talking about Ohio State playing Michigan, Wisconsin, and Ohio State. We're talking about some really good games in December, early December. So you're going to have schools. Your own school is going to be a little bit more engaged in a game like that than they are if you're playing Morgan State. Or you're playing, Ohio State's playing Bowling Green. You're just going to be a little bit more engaged. So I like that. But again, Seth, I go back to, man, if I'm coaching, I just really like the fact that now we're into games and let's go and see what the hell we're going to do.
Yeah, and we have great games. I mean, think about this. We start with whether, teams are going overseas to play. We got Germany, you got Texas A&M, West Virginia, you got the Feast Week lineup is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
I was talking to Alford today. Did you know this? Did you know that the chancellor of UCLA set up UCLA to go to China? The chancellor, I've never heard of that before.
Wow.
I've never heard of it. He's like, yeah, the chancellor set us up to go to China. I'm like, wow. He's leaving Saturday. We were communicating this morning after I sent him.
They're playing Georgia Tech. I saw Georgia Tech practice this week.
The
other day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I sent Alford a picture. Do you think this is bad? I sent Alford a picture. I'm on a group text with a bunch of guys that we played with together at Indiana, and I saw a picture of LaMelo or whatever that younger ball is. We're driving a Porsche. So I sent it in a group picture. I said, man, Coach Knight never gave any of us, except for Steve, this kind of car. You know what I'm saying?
Now, speaking of playing, a guy that committed to Ohio State, went to one summer school class or two summer school classes, Braxton Beverly. Thad Mata gets let go. He gets let go. And Braxton decides, he was going to play. That was his guy. He was going to play for Coach Mata. And then all of a sudden, he appeals to the NCAA. We're going to NC State, where actually his prep school coach, I think, is an assistant coach. And he appeals to the NCAA, and the NCAA says, no, you got to sit out the year. To me, here's the deal. To me, first of all, we all know players sign with a school, but they go to play for a coach. All right? There's no doubt about it. I mean, you know, that kid went to play for Thad Matta. That's just the way it is. He signed with Ohio State. I understand that. That was his destination, but he wanted to play for Thad Matta. Once Thad Matta was eliminated with the equation, it changed. Now, he was already in school because Ohio State waited forever to let Coach Matta go. And he was already enrolled in summer school. I cannot believe, I have the hardest time understanding, and I'm not an NCAA basher. I'm you know, and I don't have agendas. You know, people have agendas. I don't have an agenda. But sometimes you just got to do what's right and not go by the lay of the land. And this kid, he should have an opportunity to play at NC State this year. I cannot believe they didn't win their appeal. I think that when a coach is let go, and especially after summer school has already started, I think it makes sense for the NCAA to find a waiver.
Oh, God, there's no question. I mean, I said this last night to John Feinstein, and I were having a discussion. You know, I don't understand, and I've said this on this podcast, I don't get where the NCAA or why the NCAA continues to throw student-athlete down our throat. You know what?
Because I tweeted today, actually.
What's that?
It's so funny. It's exactly what I tweeted. We hear, how many times have we heard the word student-athlete?
Just
in our coaching tangent.
Yeah, I mean, just be honest. I think the NCAA should just say, look, we're going to do what's best for the institution. The institutions make up the NCAA. And when we do what's best for the institution, then guess what? It's going to be better for the student athlete. I you know, look, that would take everybody that complains about the NCAA basically off their back, because it would be the truth. They're trying to do what's right for the institution. That doesn't really apply in this case. What they're doing in this case, there has to be, in my opinion, I don't have everything in front of me, and I never pretend to know everything about a situation unless the situation involves me, a family member, or I've been brought into a situation by somebody. So I don't pretend to know everything about this situation. But what I do know about this situation seems to be incredibly unfair, seems to be incredibly unstudent-athlete friendly, seems to be, quite frankly, seems to be completely idiotic. And the NCAA ought to be ashamed. The NCAA ought to rethink it. The NCAA, if in fact what we know about it is even close to what it is. So I don't have any... I just don't understand why an organization of seemingly really smart people can be incredibly stupid. All you got to do is say, look, we are here for the institution. We are here to serve our membership. Our membership is the institution, and by serving our membership, we will do right by student athletes. They bring this crap on themselves, and I don't know what. I'm at a loss because it's so stupid. So stupid.
Yeah, I mean, you know, to me, it's real simple. And obviously, you know, coming off the heels of what's gone on with North Carolina, where, you know, it just doesn't make sense. You got the kid Jalen Hayes at Oakland who was suspended four games. He actually is going to graduate early. He's going to graduate in December. Originally, they put him on an 8-game ineligibility because he actually passed a class, but Oakland, you had to have a 2.8 in a certain class for it to count on your transcript. And I think the NCAA is worried about, well, you know, we have the progress rule, and if you don't get to 18 credits in those two semesters, then you're not making progress. Well, he passed the class, but only the institution had a tougher rule than actually the NCAA has, and they're making the poor kid sit out at four games. And It makes no sense, and especially on top of the Carolina thing where thousands of students enrolled in fraudulent classes, but there's no penalty and everyone's playing and banners are hanging. So here's my thing. Here's how we're going to put a bow on this thing here, D-squared.
Yes, sir.
To me, if I'm North Carolina, not North Carolina basketball, if I'm North Carolina, the institution, you know what I would do, I think? I would think that I would impose some type of penalty on my basketball program. Now, I'm not taking down banners. I'm not taking away wins. I might take away a bunch of scholarships. I might even say, you know what? Our team's not going to play in the NCAA tournament this year. Now, that's not totally fair because that's not fair to the kids that are there now that had nothing to do with that, those classes. But if I'm North Carolina and I want to stand for something, I might say, you know, Coach, it happened. It was, you know, obviously you were proven innocent in the whole thing from what the investigation says, but it does just doesn't look right. And you know what? You got 10 scholarships the next 2 years. What do you think of that?
I think it'd be great, but it's never going to happen. I mean, I think it'd be.
I know, but I mean, you talk about integrity.
Yes.
That would make a statement of, you know what? Those guys get it. There's some remorse there. Because right now, it doesn't seem like the institution has any remorse.
The institution doesn't give a rat's. I mean, if you want to know the truth, the institution's just happy that the basketball team gets to keep making money for them. And in their eyes, making the university look good because of their on-court success, when in reality it looks awful and they should do exactly what you said, but there's not a chance in hell. And I like Bubba Cunningham, who's their athletic director. Bubba,
I really like him. Bubba.
Yeah, I've known Bubba since he was AD here in Ball State, but there is no chance because Roy rules the roost. Roy is the leader of the Argyle sweater crowd. And that's just what's going to happen, period.
Well, I'll tell you, we're going to talk to a guy in a second who maybe has a new Argyle sweater, and it's a purple and not orange.
Nice.
When we come back, we'll have Mike Hopkins visit us, the new head coach of the Washington Huskies. All right, I'd like to welcome in the new head coach of the Washington Huskies, probably looking outside his office, looking at this unbelievable scene. Do you have the window in the office, Hop?
Do we have I do.
What are we looking at? What are we looking at?
Oh, we got Alaska Airlines Arena. You've got Lake Washington. You got a lot of trees. It's beautiful.
Kind of like a winter in Syracuse, New York?
A little bit different.
All right. So after all those years with Coach Boeheim, all right, you decide to get this tremendous opportunity to be the head coach at Washington. From the day you got hired to today, what's your feeling?
The feeling is incredible. It's everything that you always dreamt of. Got hired by a great AD and Jen Cohen, and you know she had a great vision for what she wanted here in the program. And the kids have been great. Obviously, there's the getting the family moved out here and all those things. So it felt like I was shot out of a cannon. But it's been a pretty exhilarating deal for me so far.
Now, you talk about getting shot out of a cannon. One of your first workouts with your team, one of your new players caught you with an elbow.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw the picture. It wasn't pretty, Hop. What happened?
Not pretty as it is. But with a broken nose to the side with two black eyes, I'm exceptionally ugly. And that was one of those ones, we were training and the kids were working really hard, just got a little flying elbow, but it was all good. And, it was a lot of fun, but it was an eye opener. I can tell you that.
Hey, Dan,
he stayed so long at Syracuse. He started to look like Boeheim.
Hey, I tell you what, man, I started to talk like Coach Knight. I was with him so long, so that hasn't worked out well. Hey, I mean, honest to God, 12 years was plenty. Hey, but let's talk about that for a second. You were the coach in waiting. What made you decide to jump?
A big thing was, you know, I had my experience with USA Basketball, and, you know, we were going through it, and I became really close with some of the Dukies, Chris Collins, Wojo, Jeff Capel, and it was interesting. You know, you're going through it, and I don't know if you've ever read those books where you start talking about life is too short, or, you know, what's really in your heart, or, you know, all these different things. I hate to say it, but you end up going, and I'm watching the NCAA tournament, and I'm watching I'm watching Wojo in it, and I'm watching Chris take Northwestern for the first time, and all the hard work, and it just became one of those things where, you know, at one place I was going to protect the legacy, which I loved, and a place that was so special to me, to, you know, trying to build your own. And I've had some opportunities, but the University of Washington was, you know, it was just too good. I felt like the potential was too great, and I thought it would be a heck of a challenge.
Hey, Mike, you know, a lot of times, you know, you played for coach, you were there with coach. Does that automatically mean we're going to see a 2-3 zone? Does that automatically mean you're going to play like coach?
No question. I Syracuse, I learned so much from coach, and the zone defense is a Rubik's Cube and done correctly. And, you know, I think it ends up being an ice ball and a snowball fight. And, you know, it gives you a great weapon. A lot of teams don't use it in our league. You know, you're playing Thursday, Saturdays, so it's hard to prepare. The one thing that we will do is we'll play a little bit of man just to change it. I'm a big tempo guy. Like, I want to be able to control the tempo. And so we've messed around with some different type of pressing and some man-to-man, but definitely the zone has been it's going to be a weapon here and something that we're going to utilize.
Now, Mike, you grew up in Southern California. You made the critical decision not to come play for me and go play for Syracuse. I was at Long Beach State. Your whole life has been screwed up since. But going back to the West Coast, bringing your family back to the West Coast, how's that transition been? Because let's say, how many years have you been in Syracuse now?
I was there as a coach for 20. I was going on my 22nd year, which would be this year. And as a player, I was there for 5. I redshirted my first year, so I'd been there more than half my life in Syracuse, New York, than I did in the West Coast. But you know, coming back west, and Coach Greenberg, you know this. It's the Southern California is a pretty special place, and you know, my mom and dad are getting older, and having them have the opportunity to see me coach and be close to them is just a thrill. My dad, people don't know this, my dad went to school here for 2 years, and he grew up 10 minutes down the road. My mom and dad were both born in Seattle. And so to be back here, it's kind of like a full circle deal. You know, you go speak at an event, and a guy comes up to you, and he grew up next door to your father, and he's showing you pictures of high school and his pledge class when he was in a fraternity. So, you know, just being back here, it's exciting for the kids. It's new, and there's some challenges, but for the most part, it's been like a new beginning, and you know, there's a new excitement, there's a new energy.
What's the biggest adjustment for you in terms of just your daily schedule? Like, explain the difference.
I think the biggest thing, and I think the biggest thing is the head coach. You know, every decision is mine, from uniforms to, you know, and so those commitments has been not a challenge, but it's just, you know, it's a different type of, you know, time restrictions. And number two, getting the job, I didn't bring anybody that I had worked with before. So part of this is the staff, Dave Rice, Cam Adaller, and Will Conroy, and Jerry Hobby have been great, but we're all learning each other. So getting them to do it the way that I'd like to do it on a day-to-day basis is something it takes time. But that's been a challenge of a day-to-day deal of, we all have the same values, same vision, how we can go, but it goes back to every area of the organization, getting it done the way that I want it to be done.
Speaking of, you know, you come in there, Lorenzo Romar, one of the all-time nice guys in college basketball, and a hell of an exhibition game player, by the way, back in his day.
He lit us up. I can tell you, athletes in action. Oh my goodness. Stopped 40 on us.
Every night. All right, you follow him. I'm guessing the players really liked him, you know, and all that kind of stuff. So you got to negotiate that or navigate that, didn't you, when you first came, or no?
You know what? We had lost, obviously, a recruiting class, and the players, we were able to retain everybody other than one person, Matthew Attaway, who went to Pepperdine. But for the most part, the staff, Will Conroy is a superstar. Cam and Daw, they did a great job. Dave Wright, they did a great job of really talking to these kids. And it was a form of speed dating. I mean, at the end of the day, they had to make a decision that was life decision for them in a month. And that's, you know, there was a lot of time on the plane, flying, meeting with the families, a lot of time, you know, speaking about the vision. And, that was a very difficult thing. But a lot of, you know, when those kids say I do and they're coming back, it was a pretty exciting thrill to get those guys to believe in your vision and what you, you know, how we can build this thing and get this thing done.
Now, you guys had a scrimmage. You as the head coach, Yeah. You guys played it, I guess, as a game, and I know we can't get too much into the details, but just speaking to your team, like, what was the feeling? You and I have had a lot of conversations. I say you got to enjoy this, man. You worked your tail off your whole life. This is an incredible opportunity. But what was that feeling? I mean, like, here you're standing in front. You're getting ready to go out, you know, and you're going to do it in this week for real eventually. But what is that feeling like? I mean, like, explain. Like,
you know what? It was awesome because, you know, these guys, we've had them for 5-6 months when we took the job. You know, from training them, and you know, you put a lot of hours and invested in them, and you know, to go out there and them seeing themselves in the 2-3 zone for the first time and seeing how effective it could be, and you know, just kind of how we're going to do it. And it was a great test run, getting the kinks out, but it's just exciting. You know, when you guys have been head coaches, it's yours. It's a reflection of what you do, and there's a lot of pride that you put into that, and a lot of your heart, a lot of your soul. And so, you know, we still have a lot of work to do, and a lot, as you guys know, anything new is, you know, we're all freshmen again here. And so, you know, but their attitudes have been great. It was exciting to be able to coach them and sit in that timeout and drop a play, and just excited to move forward.
I got to ask, what was the best bit of advice Coach Boeheim gave you? I mean, and you know what? Do it in Coach Boeheim's voice, because I think I do a pretty good Boeheim. Mike Hopkins does a great Boeheim.
So I walk in, I bring three coaches into his office, and I introduce him, and he gets up, and, you know, Coach, he's one of a kind, and they think, you know, James Naismith comes up, which he's such an incredible coach, and they ask him, they say, Coach Boeheim, can you give me one word of advice in coaching? And he looks at him, he slunches down a little bit, puts his hands out, palms up next to his hips, and he goes, shorten your bench. and he is, you listen, he is a genius. He's, you know, I've learned so much from him, and I'm so lucky to work for a guy like that. And, you know, he's rare. The one thing I can tell you got to get John to do this. They've got to build a statue of him. What he's done for that community and that school is unparalleled and a legend in the game, and I'm lucky I have worked for him and learned from him.
Well, you're going to do great, man, and you have such a passion for the game, and you know, some guys aren't ready to become head coaches. There's no doubt you are, and we're excited to follow you, and we appreciate you hanging out with two fired coaches.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate you.
How good was that story? That was pure Boeheim. And, you know, when you work for a guy for 20-something years and you play for him for four, as I always say, someone always does the head coach pretty well. I guess Mike Hopkins is pretty good at the old man.
Yeah, you got to be. I mean, you know, look, I went to Indiana when I was 18, left when I was 34. I used to have Coach Knight. I used to do, true story, I used to do radio interviews as Coach Knight. I used to talk to recruits at my house or in the office. I remember talking to Robert Tractor Trailer as Bob Knight. And Knight comes in the office. He goes, what are you doing? I go, I'm you. So then he started doing that all the time. He goes, hey, Dan, I got to do this interview. You mind doing it? Just say you're me. Like, all right. So I used to call recruits, and I would read them in the paper about how a kid had a great conversation with Bob Knight, but it was really me doing my Bob Knight imitation.
Oh, wait a second. You can't, D squared. You can't do that without giving us a little.
It's terrible. I got nothing now. I can't even do it now.
No.
It's been 25 years since I did it. I swear to God. I tried to do it the other day, and I can't even get in character. He caught me one time as a senior doing Coach Knight, doing him in front of the team. He walks in the locker room, and I see him, and everybody straightens up, right? We're all laughing because I'm doing Coach Knight. I'm throwing stuff around. And he sits against the wall watching me do this, and I'm doing him, and I'm looking over my shoulder, and he is rolling laughing, and I ended up by cussing me out, like my seat. You know, Doc gets you no good. You know, and he's like, all right, let's go practice and laugh. And so I'm telling you, man, I swear to God, I used to do interviews. Guy would say, oh, we're having Bobby Knight on, and I would come on and do him. I mean, I swear to God, I must have talked to 25 recruits as Coach Knight. He said, hey, take a list home and call these kids and say you're me. All right. Honest to God.
Hey, who says you don't learn stuff when you listen to this podcast? I mean, like, you don't get this anywhere else. Download us and tune into us next week as we have the new head Hoosier.
Yep.
Archie Miller, come join us.
Should be good.
Let's do it.
Thank you for listening to Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage. You can listen and subscribe to all ESPN podcasts in the Listen tab of the ESPN app, including the latest from the NBA and the NBA Lockdown Podcast, available in the ESPN app. Courtside with Greenberg and Dockage.